Welcome to The Health Edge, translating the science of self-care. I'm Mark Pettis, and with my friend, colleague, John Bagnulo. John, good morning, my friend.
Hey, good morning, Mark. And hey, happy Thanksgiving. My favorite holiday.
Yes. Happy Thanksgiving to you and the Bagnulos, John. This, too, is my favorite holiday. And I love the context of gratitude and just being with family and so much to be grateful for. So happy Thanksgiving to the Health Edge community out there. And each year, generally, we do have a podcast that around the theme of how can you kind of get through the holiday season, right, without abandoning what might be major health goals and still enjoying and being able to celebrate and consume that which, you know, tastes good. But as I like to say, and you know, it's great to be consuming the food you love, but it's even better when those foods love you back. So
yeah, well said.
Yeah,
well said.
So as you work with clients, John, and in your own life and family, what are some of the strategies you use to kind of get through this holiday season without compromising too much of those health intentions?
Yeah, well, I love what you just said. I mean, I think there's this perception that times, and it's important to try to break this down, but you know, the two shouldn't be mutually exclusive. I mean, I think you can have an amazing day filled with gratitude and love and being with family and eating food that you really enjoy. And then the food can be healthy at the same time. It doesn't have to be, they don't have to, there's really doesn't have to be a sacrifice, in my opinion, with this. So I always say, like, you know, try to keep things more savory, less sweet. I think if you start out with that goal in terms of how you engineer a Thanksgiving dinner, how you develop recipes, I think it tends to work out really well in every direction. People really appreciate some of the differences that you can create with recipes. But and the other thing is, look, this can be one of the most nutrient dense, healthiest meals of the year, believe it or not. I think what can kind of create issues here at times, or it's the amount of desserts and how heavily sweetened things are. Not just for Thanksgiving, but for every holiday, right? And I think if you keep the sweeteners kind of at bay, you use a lot of herbs and spices, and I'll get into some of these different ideas that might be able to help our listeners. You know, you can really transform what might have been a day that takes you a couple days to recover from, and you can replace that as a really solid day that leaves you more energized and really in a better place in terms of your nutrient levels and your overall health. And so the one thing I would always say is, just try to look at how many whole vegetables you include with this Thanksgiving meal. You know, some of the things are going to be mainstays, like obviously turkey. I think most people stuffing. I think some of those things, and we can tweak some of that. But when you get into some of the side dishes, you know, I think that's where whole vegetables, maybe again, either seasoned with butter and herbs or olive oil if someone has an aversion to butter for whatever reason, you know, create that more savory mix with that approach, as opposed to, you know, things that are, again, and there's a long list of things, like you can have amazing sweet potato or winter squash dish without the brown sugar and without the things that kind of take it over the top. Mm-hmm. So that's where I would start. I'm going to just, if it's okay, just wrap here for a few minutes.
Run
on
ahead,
some,
brother.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, great. So, you know, turkey, again, that's a mainstay. I'm just going to talk off the top of my head. What's important here? What are you going to have with the turkey? If you're going to have gravy, how can you make gravy something that really helps you? Well, one of the big things you can do with gravy is, you know, again, everybody's going to look at this through a different lens, but most people thicken their gravy with some kind of flour. And I think you've got a couple options here. Number one is What type of flour could you thicken the gravy with that's going to be rich in resistant starch? And that resistant starch is something we've talked about in the past, and we can hopefully talk about it in the future because of how important it is for the microbiome in many people's cases. Some people might not need that resistant starch because they have a diet that already contains it. But a lot of people and a lot of our listeners who are interested in choosing a lower carb kind of way of life, you know, would benefit from some resistant starch. And so there's some different ones you can use to thicken gravy. You know, potato starch can work well, green plantain flour, green banana flour. Believe it or not, they don't have any of the banana flavor, so they work really well as a substitute for wheat flour, in what is traditionally used to thicken gravy. So that's one thing. The other thing is with gravy, use olive oil, because olive oil, and again, you could use other, you're not going to use butter typically because of how it thickens when it cools and it makes the gravy a little difficult to work with. But rather than use some other type of oil, it's much better to use olive oil with your resistant starch and then whatever you need for in the way of you know, again, herbs. Some people put herbs in their gravy. I think that's a great thing to do. I think thyme is a no-brainer. Thyme contains a really volatile substance known as thymol, Thymol. And this thymol has been shown to be really beneficial to neurological health and to nerve health because of how it helps resist oxidative stress at that neurological level. And so, you know, you can get a really significant amount of thyme into the Thanksgiving meal overall, but the gravy is a great way to do it. And most people who have gravy with added thyme really appreciate the flavor because of how well that goes with the turkey. So again, make that gravy, you know, make that gravy a little bit more than just the turkey fat and the wheat flour, right, and the salt. Make that a little bit more, bring a little bit more savory flavor to that, as well as something that's going to really benefit your microbiome. Then as we move into the area of stuffing, which I think has always been my favorite side dish to Thanksgiving, try making it without breadcrumbs or without bread at all. And this is a recipe I'd be happy to share with our listeners. Use mushrooms, and you got to cook the mushrooms for like 20 to 30 minutes to really get them to where they need to be. Combine mushrooms with obviously celery and onions, or you can use leeks instead, and then wild rice. And you're going to use parsley, sage, thyme. You're going to use those real traditional stuffing herbs, but you bake that for about 45 minutes after the mushrooms have been cooked for 20 to 30 minutes. And you've got a really, really amazing mix of different types of fibers. You got a lower, much, much lower carbohydrate content than you'd have if you had all that bread, all those breadcrumbs in there. And you can really weave in a significant amount of herbs as well, because that's really what gives stuffing so much of its flavor. So you're going to have salt, you may have pepper, but you're going to have a lot more in there in the way of herbs. And you're not going to have the breadcrumbs, you're going to have mushrooms. And if you use shiitake mushrooms, well, shiitake mushrooms, as you know, Mark, have a plethora of benefits that have been really well studied over the last 4 or 5 decades. So wild rice, again, you only need a modest amount of wild rice to kind of give it some body. But most of the flavor, the texture, and everything that we love about stuffing is coming from, you know, it's coming from the mushrooms, the leeks, or the onions and the celery. So that's one of my favorite modifications overall. It's making stuffing, but without breadcrumbs. And we started doing that, you know, 15 years ago with a, you know, when we started our family, trying to get a, you know, trying to come up with a gluten-free stuffing. And I just didn't really like the versions that were based on, you know, like brown rice flour and things like that. I just felt like they were just different. And so if it was going to be different, I wanted to be really different and really flavorful. So that's one of my favorites. Sweet potatoes. And again, I'm going with kind of like your national average Thanksgiving. I know some people don't have sweet potatoes at Thanksgiving. They have winter squash. That's fine. They're both amazing vegetables to incorporate. If you're going to eat like a really carbohydrate-rich food, I don't think you can beat the sweet potato. It's high in selenium, it's high in vitamin A. But the one thing that I'd encourage our listeners to consider is if you're going to use a traditional sweet potato. And you know, you might hear the word yam, but nobody really has yams in North America. You can go find them at like an ethnic market, but most everybody has a garnet. It's going to be called a garnet or a jewel yam, but those are really sweet potatoes. Yams are huge. They're like, you know, 1 to 2 feet long, right? And that's a very traditional African root vegetable. But we're going to have sweet potatoes in this country for the most part. And rather than sweeten them additionally, you can cook them a little bit longer, okay, to concentrate some of the sweetness. And then give them a good dose of cinnamon. You know, cinnamon really goes a long ways at bringing out the flavor and also helping lower that glycemic index of the sweet potato. But a sweet potato is like, it's an amazing food, and it can really, it can bring that sweetness to the meal, but not put it over the top. So, and the one type of sweet potato that I would encourage our listeners to try, and I know it's not a traditional, type of sweet potato, but the purple sweet potato is very, very different. It has a markedly lower sugar content. It has an extremely high antioxidant value. And there are, like, last time I looked, this was about a year ago, so it's been a while. There were 300 papers on PubMed that looked at how purple sweet potatoes influenced either animal or human health in different types of studies. And it is one of the, I would say it's a top 10, if you want to call it a medicinal food, just from what it brings to the physiology level of things, it's remarkable. The anthocyanins that we praise in blueberries and things like that, you know, they're found in those purple sweet potatoes at an incredibly high level. And so that's something you could introduce. You know, I know it's probably late for this year's Thanksgiving, because, you know, you don't have a lot of time and you're probably not going to find purple sweet potatoes today, but they are available at a lot of big grocery stores. They are obviously available at most of your health food stores and places like that. But that's a huge upgrade when it comes to root vegetables. That purple sweet potato is tough to beat.
Love that.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's another thing to consider. Then again, not everybody has Brussels sprouts. You know, not everybody has collard greens, but I think having one of those two with Thanksgiving goes a long ways, you know, for a couple reasons. Number one is both of them are really good sources of sulforaphane. That's something found in brassicas that as a phytonutrient has incredible anti-cancer properties, very anti-inflammatory. Again, it's great for both the liver. It's great for the brain, heart health as well. So sulforaphane is found in broccoli, but at a fraction of what you'll get in Brussels sprouts and collard greens. So, you know, again, collard greens is more of a traditional southern United States accompaniment to Thanksgiving. Brussels sprouts, more, you know, here in New England and in northern states. But either one is incredible. And I think having those at your Thanksgiving meal brings in so much in the way of, you know, not just sulforaphane, but vitamin C in the case of Brussels sprouts. Also, the type of fiber that are found in those is great prebiotic, great for gut health, which a lot of people need help with at this time of year, right? I mean, when the holidays set in, and this would really mark the beginning of that stretch, a lot of people have, and you and I have talked about it, Mark, a lot of people have an overall like pattern of meals or diet for 2 months where the microbiome is really underserved, right? A lot of heavily processed flour-based foods. And, you know, I think having Brussels sprouts and collard greens in general, not just at Thanksgiving, but certainly at this meal, it's a great way to kind of set that pattern for the next couple months, because they do offer us so much that we typically don't get from your standard American vegetables like broccoli and things like that. So I really like Brussels sprouts a lot. Try not to overcook them. I think that's when they get a bad rap. That's when kids have a bad experience with Brussels sprouts and they never go back, right? Because they're cooked to mush. Leave them al dente. Leave just a little bit of texture at the core. You know, use the salt liberally with them. It really brings out a lot of that flavor. But that's one of my top vegetables, period. And to add it at Thanksgiving, again, you're just kind of turning up the nutrient density of the meal. So that's one thing. And then I'll end with this. You know, the desserts can really be, they can be very healthy, and they're going to still have maybe some sugar depending on the version you want to make. But a pumpkin pie that is made with an almond meal or a pecan crust. So here's the I think the what really seals the deal. You take pecans or almonds and you put them in a food processor, or you put them in a Cuisinart just for, you know, just pulse it for, you know, 5 or 6 shots with that, so that you don't grind up the almonds or the pecans too much. You're going to have some good sized pieces in there still. And then you combine that with melted butter and you pack that in a pie plate. So that becomes your crust, right? So you've got a really high fat, low carb crust. Gluten-free, and pecans are loaded with antioxidants. People are always surprised to hear that pecans have one of the highest antioxidant values of any food per 100 grams, but you can use almond meal as well, and you can even buy almond flour if you needed to just make this a little more convenient. And then you fill that with a combination, and the filling is really up to the, you know, to the chef, so to speak, but if you use canned pumpkin, that's fine. I would recommend you get organic canned pumpkin for several reasons, but it can be a heavy pesticide burden. You can use, obviously, fresh pie pumpkins, and then you use ample amounts of egg yolk, and use all those pumpkin pie spices, which are, you know, things like, you know, obviously allspice would work, but cinnamon, cardamom, you know, coriander, is up to the chef on this, but use a lot of those spices, and then try sweetening it with something like, you know, monk fruit, stevia. And the reason stevia is an option with pumpkin pie is stevia, a lot of times, is people have an aversion to it because it does have that and a strong flavor, right? That's very different than sugar or honey. But when you use stevia, and this won't even be an issue with monk fruit, but if when you use them with all of those pumpkin pie spices, you're not going to get that off taste. You're just going to get the sweetness. So, and again, that pumpkin pie is loaded with vitamin A. It's loaded with selenium and so many other micronutrients because you're making it with pumpkin, eggs, a nut-based crust. And so, and then you can top that with some heavy whipping cream that, again, doesn't need to be sweetened at all. You just whip the heavy whipping cream into a thick consistency, and you've got it, I think, what could be an amazing and very healthy dessert. So I've been going there for a few minutes, Mark. Yeah, what do you think?
Wow.
I mean, does anything there strike a chord?
It all strikes a chord, John. That was just amazing. And as I listen to you describing some of these adaptations, I mean, I love, John, that you're sort of working off the traditional foods, right? Because some people, I do think, perceive that
that we have to abandon some of those foods, right?
Yeah, you know, those traditional foods that you love in order to eat in a more healthy or health promoting way. And so you've totally challenged that misperception. And I, in addition to just this principle of minimizing processing. I love that, you know, the nutrient density, everything is, of course, is nutrient dense. And then this reverence, right, for healthy fat sources from butter to olive oil to nuts. I think we remind folks that fear of fat is really important to kind of address as you to modify, because therein, right, you will discover things that you love that you've been perhaps avoiding. And so to bring more butter in, to bring olive oil in.
You can enjoy the holidays. Just enjoy it. Enjoy it with, enjoy it with savory. Yeah.
And so I love that. And then I think, you know, we talk a lot about protein and people, still traditionally think of turkey as this tryptophan riddled, you know, sedating, you know, meat, where, you know, really what makes people sleepy is all the carbohydrates that they consume with it.
Exactly.
Turkey gets unfairly condemned, but the importance of protein in general and getting enough. And for those with really big appetites, you know, going for an additional portion of the turkey or protein, as opposed to another slice of pumpkin pie, or another couple of scoops of mashed potato. Anytime you can substitute, right, a protein,
100%,
a carbohydrate as an additional energy source, even though all the carbs you describe are root vegetables, sumptuous, fiber rich. I think that's the beauty of this, is that you see some carbs just serve you better than others, right? So,
but that's a really good point. Let protein be your anchor, because it's going to do, you know, it's going to really, it's going to go a long ways to not only supporting like our physiology. You and I talk about this all the time, right? It's a movie we've seen, you know, hundreds of times, right? Where year after year, we accrue this basically lean body mass debt. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that just we underconsume protein. But the other side of this story is that if you have that extra serving of turkey, like that's going to really probably keep you out of the desserts a lot more, right, than if you didn't have that serving of turkey, because of just how the satiety value is, it's unmatched. It really is.
It's so important, that the satiety value, because it, as many of us might be sitting around all day watching football, hanging out with family, it's, you know, after the meal, right, you kind of sit back, and then there'll be more snacking, maybe. So I think this eating, not just for that moment, but how anticipating how it'll make you feel in the several hours after. So to be more satiated without the sleepiness and loginess and brain fog, you'll just be more into what's happening around you and have more energy, whether that's to maybe go out for a walk after your meal, getting a little, you know, natural light, playing with your kids or your grandkids. So it's not just the meal, but you know how we feel, right?
Yeah.
In those hours afterwards. So I love the way you put all of those principles together, John, and obviously just a huge upgrade from some of the traditional meals. The other thing that I sometimes think about, as people plan for the season, is you know, for those that have a continuous glucose monitor, or for those that might be eligible, which usually implies you have a diagnosis of pre-diabetes or diabetes. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about this, John.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to see these made available to any person. But the holidays can be a really good time to just look at that information, not to be guilt-ridden about it, but to say, hey, you know, I tried this, and wow, look at the numbers an hour or two after eating. I can do better than that. You know, 210 is just not where I want to be, right? So I think anyone who's wearing a CGM will notice very dramatic differences in those excursions of sugar from what you describe. And I think that is probably the holy grail from a metabolic health perspective, is no matter what you're choosing to eat or drink, and you know, we didn't, you know, get too into that, but obviously sugar sweetened drinks on top of a lot of sugar in the meal is just, you know, adding fuel to the fire. So
the other thing on the topic of beverages is, and this is again not to tell people not to enjoy a glass of wine or, you know, to have, you know, the spirits that help them with their traditional plan. The one thing that I think people should be aware of is that our liver has a really difficult time metabolizing alcohol in the presence of large amounts of polyunsaturated fats. And the only scenario that's worse is when our body tries to metabolize alcohol in the presence of fructose. Those three things are very unique challenges to the human liver: fructose, polyunsaturated fats, and alcohol. So if you're going to have one of those, it's important to be really vigilant around the other two, because when all three are present, it's a nightmare for the liver, right? It can only really address a very small finite amount of any one of those at any one time. And you know, I've looked at some of the research on this, and if you're going to have a couple drinks, you know, you definitely want to make sure that you're not having, in addition to that, some type of really fructose rich dessert or some recipe made with, you know, large amounts of some seed oil that's very high in omega-6s. So, you know, you look at the typical Thanksgiving meal and you're going to have a couple drinks with the meal. Well, okay, but like, if you start looking at the dark meat of turkey, you start looking at the oils that most people make their stuffing with, you start really looking at the ledger here, right, Mark? You got sugar in the desserts. You got a lot of, you know, a lot of seed oils used in some of those recipes, the dark meat on turkey. You put it all together and it's tough. So it's important to like address at least two of those three, right? Again, not to tell our listeners that, you know, you can't have a glass of wine or a couple glasses of wine with Thanksgiving, but that may not be the end of the story. It might be everything that your liver's trying to do at the same time that it's detoxifying that alcohol.
Great advice, John. And that too falls so nicely into this concept of metabolic health, right? Minimizing that fatty liver tendency, that you know, that lipogenic, right? Just
right.
And so really great news to use there, John, for folks. I appreciate it. I took a lot of notes and I love that. And you know, we talk a lot about mindfulness and you know, the importance of obviously bringing that in to the spirit of Thanksgiving celebration, as one would do with every meal. And so there's what we're eating, and then there's sort of how we're eating it, right? It's
and who we're eating it with, and who we're eating it with.
Yes, right. What we bring to the table, reverence for where our food has come from, I know I'm not saying anything that people don't already know and hear all the time, but it's good to be reminded that food is about so much more than just satisfying hunger, and there's an energy to it. There's a quantum signature to it, and the more love and gratitude, right, we bring to that engagement, I do believe abundance comes in many forms, and
that's beautiful.
And it all just kind of adds up to what hopefully for most will be a joyful, satisfying, and meaningful experience. So,
I'm grateful for you, Mark. I'm grateful, you know, for our listeners and their interest in, you know, what we talk about. And there's so much to be grateful for. And for me, that's the antidote, gratitude. So that's why it's my favorite holiday.
Yeah, and I am grateful for you, John, and the Bagnulos. Thank you. And I think it was the Dalai Lama that once said, to pay full attention to another is a generous gift. And you give so much to so many, John, in your generosity of spirit and sharing information, and it makes the world a better place. And I'll look forward to reconnecting with you after Thanksgiving, John. We'll have some football to talk about.
Yeah, for sure.
And, so you you have an awesome season here, John, and more to come soon. Thank you, buddy.
You as well, Mark. My love to you, buddy.